Thank you, Jeff and Joyce. Love that song, and I'm going to have to start just being quicker on the draw because I heard that the other day, and I thought that might be a good one for us to do sometime. And so, anyway, appreciate it very much, and that is a great message in that song. I don't normally get all excited about a movie that's coming out, and I've seen here recently a lot of hype about all the different movies that have come out this summer, the Spider-Man and the Batman and the Wonder Woman and all that stuff, and I just kind of wonder what is the big deal about those things. But I really understand it because I am extremely excited about a new movie that's been released this past week. It's called Dunkirk, and it's a story about something entirely impossible coming to pass. And I understand, not having seen the movie yet, that in the movie it doesn't pay too much attention to prayer or to divine intervention, but history tells a different story. And here's the deal. During World War II, about approximately 400,000 British soldiers were stranded near the French town of Dunkirk. And back home in England, King George called for a national day of prayer that the men could be rescued and returned home safely. And for the next several days, that was the focus in Great Britain. And my guess is it's been a long time since Great Britain has focused on prayer. But they did then. And miracles began to happen. First, Hitler had nearly a million troops prepared to go and pursue those 400,000 British soldiers. For no apparent reason, they pulled back. Next, the normally choppy waters of the English Channel and the North Sea that were in there were eerily calm. And that allowed even small fishing boats, hundreds of them, to make the trip across the English Channel and pick up a few soldiers each. And then an unusual fog settled in. Now, it's not unusual to have fog in London, but it was unusual in this particular part of the world. And that fog kept the German fighter planes overhead from seeing what was going on below. And then a severe storm, thunderstorm, hit the European mainland, keeping the Nazi troops from changing their minds and pursuing the soldiers. Of the 400,000 who were trapped there, 340,000 were rescued. Now, that may not sound like much of a miracle to the 60,000 who were not, but if all of them had been lost, the course of history could have been changed. I've seen a lot of things recently that say instead of complaining about our leaders, we should pray for them, and I challenge you to do that, not just now, but, you know, we can't change the past, but every leader that we have, whether you like him or her or not, we need to be praying for them. But too many of us, I think, get the idea that all hope is lost because of who happens to be in office from one time to the other. And whether we're talking about our nation or talking about a bad diagnosis in our own lives, or an errant child, or a financial crisis, we need to be praying about it. I haven't seen Dunkirk yet. I hope to see it very soon. But I've seen some previews. And one of the things that struck me, 400,000 soldiers. You think the line at Walmart is long, you know? Think about that, 400,000 people. That's the entire population of downtown Kansas City, of the Kansas City Metro, and all of them waiting to be picked up, and in some cases a half dozen at a time. Do you think that the guys at the end of that line weren't praying for a miracle? Today's passage tells about someone, in fact several someones, including the disciples, who were facing a crisis of unbelief. And all of us probably face something like this on a smaller scale nearly every day. We may pray, but often, at least I do, I pray with doubt that it will be answered. We need to pray believing. We're going to look today into a passage from Mark chapter 9, be reading verses 17 through 24 and talking a little bit about what comes before and after. So I'm going to ask if you would and are able to please stand as we read from God's word. Mark chapter 9, verses 17 through 24. And it says, then one of the crowd answered and said, Teacher, speaking to Jesus, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast it out, but they could not. He answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. Then they brought him to him. And when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. So he, Jesus, asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. And often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. And Jesus said to him, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Now we came into the middle of the story here. So let me give you some background. Jesus and James and Peter and John have just come down from the mountain where they saw Moses and Elijah. And Jesus has been transfigured. His appearance changed. And God called out from heaven while they are on the mountain, this is my beloved son. Hear him. And then when Jesus and the three disciples returned from the mountain and joined the other disciples, they encountered a dispute between the disciples and a group of people. Not that Jesus needed to ask, but he did ask. He says, what are you discussing with them? And that's where we came in. A man in the crowd said he had a son who had a mute spirit. He couldn't speak. And that same spirit caused the boy to have convulsions. Now today, something like this happens, we would look for a medical answer. We would look for some medication to take care of the problem, and perhaps that's because of our unbelief. Then the last line of verse 18 tells us, so I spoke to your disciples that they should cast it out, but they could not. Back in Mark chapter 3, Jesus appointed his 12 disciples. And in verse 15 of chapter 3, we're told that Jesus gave them power to heal sicknesses and to cast out demons. That's in chapter 3. We're in chapter 9. Now, I know it's easy to be critical of the disciples for failing in their mission because Jesus had specifically empowered them to do exactly what the Father had asked them to do, to cast out this spirit. And so we might be critical of them, thinking they had not enough faith. Jesus said, O faithless generation. But I want you to hear this as well from John 14, verse 12. Most assuredly, Jesus speaking, I say to you, he who believes in me, the works that I do, he will also do, and greater works than these will he do. Now, the first one I told you there from Mark chapter 3, he was talking to the disciples. But in John 14, he's talking to you and me. He's talking to believers here. And he tells them, you will be able to do greater works than he, because we believe. So don't be too critical of the disciples for failing, because at least I do. I fail in this every day. The disciples came up against something they couldn't handle. And let me ask you a question. Have you come up against anything recently that you just couldn't handle? And don't you say, God doesn't give us more than we can handle. Because he does. He does. I've always been a little perplexed, though, by Jesus' reaction to the disciples' failure to cast out the spirit. Verse 19. He answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? And then he said, bring him to me. Now, I think this seems like a little harsh, you know, to respond to this man who came to the disciples for help. I'm not going to go through the whole book of Mark up to this point, but just let me suffice it to say that the previous 8 chapters are filled with mighty miracles that Jesus did. Jesus sent his disciples out with the explicit instruction that they should have the power to heal sicknesses and cast out demons. And it's kind of like, you know, raising your kids or whatever, and you tell them for the 100th time to do something, and they don't do it. You get a little fed up. And you say things like, How long shall I have to bear with you? You never said it like that, I'm fairly confident. But you say things like that. And Jesus has already outlined the way that these things were to be handled, and he's given them instruction, and a lack of faith prevented them from doing the work. I'm so guilty of this. And I wonder how many times a day Jesus must say, how long am I going to have to put up with Bruce? May I just say that no one could have been more convicted from last week's message than me, because in this past week, I didn't always choose to be on the sunny side. We've had some difficult things going on, and I many times chose doom and gloom over the sunny side. So I was convicted by last week's message, and I've told you this so many times before, but these messages are for me. You just get to hear what God said to me. So be prepared for more confessions, because I know the power of God, and I know the promise of God, and I know I should have unshakable faith. And yet, so many times, my faith gets shaken. In the end, the instructions there in verse 9, bring the problem directly to Jesus. Bring him to me. And boy, that's a good thing for all of us to cling to. Bring the problem to him. Verse 20. Then they brought him to him. And when he saw him, and all those pronouns, that's why we have the capital H's. And then they brought the boy to Jesus. And when the boy, the demon and the boy, saw Jesus, immediately the spirit convulsed him. And he fell on the ground. And he wallowed, foaming at the mouth. I just love how God works these things out. In our Wednesday night study in the book of Acts, we just covered the first part of chapter 19, Acts. And in chapter 19, a group of traveling or vagabond in the King James, exorcists, tried to drive out spirits in the name of the same Jesus that Paul had claimed. And the demons said to that bunch of itinerant or traveling exorcists, Jesus, we know. Paul, we know. Who are you? And what I love about that is that the demons in chapter 19 of Acts, the spirit that possessed this young boy, the devil himself, all of them recognize Jesus. But there's a huge difference between recognizing Jesus, knowing who he is, and truly knowing Jesus and bringing him into your heart. And I'm sure that everyone here this morning recognizes Jesus, but my prayer is that each of you truly knows him. In this case, as soon as the spirit saw Jesus, the boy started convulsing. And Jesus asked, how long has this been going on? And the father said, from childhood. Now, you've heard me say this so many times. Jesus doesn't need to ask questions. And he already knows the answer. When I was teaching, I didn't need to ask the students who was president during the Civil War. But I asked them anyway, because I needed to know, what is your understanding of this? Carolyn has quotes in the bulletin lots of times, and I just really liked this one this time. So I need to give you that encouragement. But she has a quote in there in the bulletin that says something like this. Christ sometimes provokes a question so that he can be the answer. In other words, Jesus asks us things so we'll see that he's the answer. Well, in this case, the benefit, the father knew how long the child had been doing this. It wasn't so much for the father's benefit, but for those who were standing near to be made aware that this was a condition or a situation that the young man had been going through since childhood. In verse 22, often he has thrown him, the demon has thrown the boy, both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. And then the father says, but if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Now there's an awful lot to unpack in that verse. The spirit that possessed the boy was an agent of the devil, flat out, no doubt about it. In every case, always, the desire of the devil is to destroy you. Bringing on convulsions and throwing this boy into the fire or the water could have ended his life. He could have burned up, he could have drowned. And then that, in turn, would have devastated this family and perhaps caused them to lose faith. In our case, the devil desires to destroy us by leading us into sin. He may not throw us in a fire, but he brings temptation. And God tells us that God will provide a way of escape. But if we choose to ignore that way of escape, the devil can use the sins that we commit to destroy our witness, to destroy our reputations. And a Christian whose witness is destroyed will cause others to lose faith or to lose a desire to develop faith. The Father said, if, to Jesus, if you can do anything. Now it's obvious that the man knew Jesus could do something because he'd heard about it, or he wouldn't have brought the boy to Jesus in the first place. But what he didn't know, and I think what you and I often don't know, we know Jesus is able, but will he? He could do something, but will he? In verse 23, Jesus said to him, if you can believe, all things are possible with him who believes. Now, some translations present this quite differently. One of them, I can't remember which one it was, but it said, just use the inflection here, that Jesus said, if I can, like, of course I can. All things are possible. Jesus is able. And Jesus has the power to do absolutely anything, anywhere, anytime. But this puts the burden back on us. Jesus is able. If you believe,